This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. I'm Chris Policano. The producer is Rudy Orozco, and the engineer is Andrea Minocchio. DC 37 is New York City's largest public employee union. We are part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. You simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. You can stay in touch with us in many ways now. You can check out the website, www.dc37.net. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you have any comments about our show or would like us to promote a community event, please drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. There is some question about when we're on the air in the next few weeks. This is soccer season. Is that right, Rudy? We're on.
That's correct.
And what exactly? We're not going to be on the air on Sunday.
The 22nd. That's correct.
And we are on the air on Wednesday.
Yes, that's true.
And the reason for this is that there is soccer that's going on. Who's playing soccer and taking up our coveted time?
Well, the Dallas Football Club is playing the New York City Football Club on Sunday at Yankee Stadium.
So when you hear that, ladies and gentlemen, that's why we are not on the air. Want to do a couple of announcements before we go to the show. Members should continue to visit Union Headquarters at 125 Barclay Street for services and activities until further notice. Service and information desks have been set up on the first floor to help meet your needs. Meanwhile, staff members are at temporary offices at 55 Water Street, while 125 Barclay Street undergoes renovations. You can continue to reach your union reps by dialing the same phone numbers you have had in the past. And for ongoing updates, you can call 212-815-1000 or visit the website www.dc37.net. If you are a DC 37 member interested in running for public office, you can sign up for DC 37's three Saturday sessions on Emerging Leaders Candidate Training. That's happening beginning Saturday, October 5th and 19th. And November 2nd at 9 a.m. at 125 Barclay Street. You must commit to all three classes, and you must register by Monday, September 30th. For details, please call 212-815-1550. And members should check out the DC 37 Rewards Program to achieve real savings while getting a great price for hotel rooms, ball games, a wide range of activities. But you have to register, and you have to visit www.dc37rewards.com. Joining us joining us in the studio to talk about the New York City Charter and the ballot questions that New Yorkers will have the opportunity to vote on this election day is New York City Charter Revision Commission Chair Gail Benjamin. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Chris. Hello, Rudy. And
Andrea.
Thank you for having me.
The city charter is New York City's constitution. It's been with us for a long time. We're going to spend the next few minutes talking about what the charter is, how it gets revised. Let's start with what it is.
The New York City Charter is the foundational document of the city and is to the city what the U.S. Constitution is to the federal government. It defines what departments there are in the city, what the responsibilities of those departments is, what the government may and may not do, and how they may do it.
And this was determined by who and when?
Well, the original charter goes back to the formation of the city, but the charter that we see now was mostly adopted by the voters in 1989 when we had a major change in government because the Supreme Court determined that the Board of Estimate, which had formerly controlled much of how the city operated, that their voting structure was illegal and violated one person, one vote.
Now, at that time, that was a big change because that moved power away from this thing called the Board of Estimate, which nobody knows what that is anymore, except those folks like yourself who sat on it. Moved the power away from those from that body to the borough presidents, if I remember correctly.
No, actually, it moved power away from the Board of Estimate, which was comprised of the borough presidents, the comptroller, the then council president, now called the public advocate, and the mayor. And the power was split between the city council and the mayor. Much, if not most, of the power went to the mayor, but the council got the power over final budget. Say of land use and final say over the budget.
Okay. And you were the head, you were the director of land use for the New York City Council for a number of years.
I was.
And now you are chairing the New York City Charter Revision Commission. How do you get that job?
Well, in this particular case, I got the job because the speaker, along with the then public advocate, the Manhattan Borough president, and several council members, put a bill before the New York City Council to establish a charter revision commission.
They did that 30 years ago.
Did that last year.
I'm a little confused. We've been revising the city charter for a while.
Right. But generally speaking, the state allows two ways in which the charter can be revised. One is that the mayor can establish a charter revision commission.
Okay.
And the other is that the council may establish one in the circumstance where the mayor has not.
And they don't need sign off from both the mayor and the city council?
No.
Okay. And so now there is – so this gives voters the opportunity, in the simplest of terms, this gives voters the opportunity to alter, amend, revise the stake, the constitution of the city of New York.
That is correct.
And what are the issues? I mean, this happens. How does the public get to know about this and to weigh in on this?
Well, I can't really speak for other charter revision commissions. For this charter revision commission, we have a very robust presence on social media. We have had many, many public hearings in each one of the boroughs. We put all of our information online.
Okay.
We encourage people to write to us. We had more than 600 ideas that people brought forth to us, whether at public hearings, whether they sent it directly to our website, whether they called with them. We met with many of the commissioners to ask their opinions about what wasn't working. We met with many organizations asked to meet with us to put before us issues that they saw. So I think we've had a robust outreach process, and we're continuing to do that now that we have adopted proposals and are having information sessions in each borough twice, once in September and once in October in each borough. Our final report is on our website and is available to everybody. You can also enter the website through your social media.
What is the website?
Is www.charter2019.nyc.
Okay. And I realize I asked a question. We got a little sidetracked to explain what the city charter is, and I never got back to the question of how you got on the city charter, how you've come to be the chair of the city charter.
In the bill that was adopted at the request of, as I said, the speaker, the public advocate, the Manhattan Borough president, and obviously the council, that bill gave the speaker the power to appoint the chair.
Oh.
And the speaker asked if I would serve. There are 15 members of the commission all told. Four, are, including the chair, are appointed by the speaker. Four are appointed by the mayor. And one each is appointed by the five borough presidents, the public advocate, and the comptroller.
I have to ask, when the council passed the law to create the Charter Revision Commission, was there some idea that the charter needed to be revised? Or was there a need, or was there some feeling that it needed to be some transparency that gave voters the opportunity to weigh in?
Well, I think there was an idea that it's been 30 years since the last time there was a full-throated examination of the charter and how it was responding to modern conditions. There was a charter revision commission, and there have been several that the mayor has implemented, but they've concentrated on...
Bloomberg did this, I think.
Yes, right? And so did Mayor de Blasio had one in 2018.
Mayor de Blasio had one last year, a Charter Review
Commission. Yes, and there were three questions on the November ballot.
At that time?
Correct.
And how did those get passed? Did those initiatives
yes,
get passed?
They did. One of them was to apply term limits to community board members.
All right.
One of them was to change the ratios for campaign finance and to allow campaign finance monies to be spent a little earlier. And the third one...
Well, let's get on
was to create the mayor's a new public engagement agency.
Okay, so then the city council decides we need some other issues addressed, I guess.
Well, actually, the city council bill was passed in the spring of 2018 before the mayor's commission came back. But the mayor had indicated he only wanted them to look at a very narrow band of issues. The council decided they wanted a broader look at the issues, particularly since in 1989, when that major charter change occurred, there were things that hadn't happened. There were no term limits
on city
elected officials. And that's had a major impact on how government runs. That was not anticipated. As it is, New York City has a very strong mayoral governing document and a very strong mayoral process. The Charter of 1989 gave much of the power to the mayor that had been the Board of Estimate. With term limits, the strength of the balance of power was really significantly altered, I would say. And that was one thing that I think people have brought up time and time again, whether the council, the borough president, the public advocate can really be an effective force for difference of opinion. That was one of the things we looked at.
Voters have voted for term limits time after time on this. In fact, one of the reasons why Bloomberg had a close reelection race was the fact that he was trying to defy term limits and the voice of the people.
Well, we weren't looking to change term limits. We were looking to see whether there are other ways in which government should be adjusted to count for the fact that in this strong mayor city, the fact that there's a churning of other offices means they're less able to do business, the city's business.
So are you suggesting that once upon a time, under the Board of Estimate, the mayor and the Board of Estimate wrestled more or had to work together more than they did as a result of term limits and the Charter of 1989?
Yes. I would say that. That's my personal opinion, though. That's not a Charter Commission opinion that we voted on or discussed. That's my opinion, and it certainly was something that I wanted to look at and examine.
We're talking with Gail Benjamin. She is the chair of the New York City Charter Revision Commission. We're talking this November, November 5th, is Election Day, and voters will have the opportunity to vote on proposed changes to the New York City Charter. And what are some of the issues broadly? We don't have to get into it, the importance of this conversation is to say the city charter matters. Here's how the city charter matters. And you do have an opportunity in November to change it. But you can't do that unless you know what you're talking about or what the charter is about. So what
probably
are the...
Probably the two of the most significant issues are changes to how we vote. Right now, we have a winner-take-all system in our votes. You vote once, and if that person wins, great. And if they don't, you don't get a choice. In many places around the country, they have experimented and implemented systems called ranked choice voting, where you rank the candidates according to your preference, instead of just voting for one candidate.
You're talking about like for mayoral races?
Yes.
You get to pick. You get to pick one through five?
Yes.
And then folks weigh that out or balance that out, average that out?
As with everything, including the way we vote now, there's an algorithm.
Okay.
So don't worry. There's not a bunch of little people sitting in a room somewhere saying.
Okay. Algorithms.
Right. So what happens, essentially, although it's invisible to the voter, is that you cast your votes, and you number them one through five. And you're number one. If once all the voting is complete, they count the number of votes. For the person who gets the least number of votes,
right,
they get eliminated, and their votes get redistributed to each person's number two.
Where is this done?
The entire state of Maine.
I'm going to follow Maine's example.
Yes, Seattle. Okay. Austin.
So proponents of this way of doing it, and I'm still not sure I understand completely what that means.
Well, you can also read in the final report.
Okay.
A very large section. There were lots and lots of speakers at our public hearings recommending
that we do it this way.
Right, including minority parties like the Green Party, et cetera, who believe that when you have a choice. People don't want to throw their vote away on a candidate who can't win. So the third party candidates end up not really having a shot because people know, well, they're not going to win, so why throw my vote away? I'll just choose my second, third, fourth choice. So those people really spoke quite passionately about the need to change that. We also had a number of fiscal responsibility people who pointed to the fact that we spent, all told, almost $30 million electing a new public advocate. That these runoff elections, particularly in special elections, cost
a lot of money.
And each time, fewer and fewer people turn out, so that it's not the most democratic way to have elected people. And we did do a lot of research, and some of that, as I said, is in the report. All of it is online.
And again, all of it's online at www.charter2019.nyc. The Charter Commission does not look at campaign finance issues.
Well, they did the last time. We did not. We started out at and had this series of hearings and meetings of all types to find out where people thought that change was really needed. And that certainly wasn't one of the things that came up.
How is that possible in a world where everyone's talking about big money affects politics and you have to have so much money to run?
Because last year, the public voted to change the matching from 6-1 to 8-1, and to raise the individual contribution amounts for people who opted into campaign finance. So I think people felt they had done enough for a while here in New York City, because this only applies to New York City.
Right, right.
Most people in New York City opt in.
Okay, right.
I think the public felt like they'd conquered that and wanted to see how things worked before they did any more.
Now,
I mean, another one did come up. Sal Albanese, who was one of the commissioners, is very enthusiastic about democracy vouchers as a way to finance campaigns.
You want to explain that a little bit?
Democracy vouchers are used in very few places and have only been used for one election cycle. What they are is that the city essentially gives everybody $100, every registered voter, $100. And the candidates, in addition to competing for your vote, are competing for you to give them that money. You can give it all to one candidate. You can split it among candidates.
These are radical changes we're talking about, aren't they? A democracy voucher is a huge step in a different direction.
I mean, correct.
I'm not taking an opinion on it. I'm just saying, wow, that's a...
And while we were intrigued by it, I think it was it was too far at this time with not enough results. As I said, there's one cycle. I think 30% of the people participated in that. We have a system, our campaign finance system, that around the country is well respected. One of the other things that we did to learn more was we had a series of expert hearings, and we invited people from around the city and around the country to talk about different topics in which we were interested, and this was one of them.
Let's go back to process. They established the commission. You're spending time now talking to the public about, which is part of the reason why we're doing this conversation now, is to let people know what this process is about, what's at stake. The charter, when people go to decide on election day what they want, the issues that you're covering, because I'm not sure I've asked that clearly enough about what is being covered in the charter.
We have talked now about the ranked choice voting. That's one question. Another question that has raised lots of interest is changes to the Civilian Complaint Review Board, which is the board where you would go if you had a complaint about how an officer of the police department interacted with you.
And they want to change that?
There are a number of issues, and people have lost some confidence in whether the CCRB, for short, handles complaints in a way that works for the public.
Okay.
There was certainly a large movement on the part of social justice advocacy groups and individuals to have a radical change and to eliminate the CCRB.
Replaced by?
An elected body.
Like an ombudsman of sorts?
No,
A body, not a person.
Correct, okay. A body.
Okay.
But it wouldn't change certain fundamental things. Under state law, the police commissioner has sole authority over discipline of uniformed officers. That is not something that can be changed by the charter, by the council, by the mayor. So however you constitute this group that would oversee complaints, they can't impose the discipline. And that was one of the most striking issues that people raised. It certainly came up in terms of Officer Pantaleone.
Right.
But one of the things that we realized was that the body, that in a large percentage of the time, once the CCRB acts and recommends discipline, the police commissioner does not impose that level of discipline.
So the change to a body is one of the things, to an independent body that's elected, is one of the issues on...
We did not take that up. We're leaving the CCRB as a CCRB, but we're broadening the people who get to appoint to it. Hopefully, there'll be more viewpoints.
Gotcha.
Right now, essentially, the mayor appoints all of the people, although they're recommended by the council and the police commissioner. The council will appoint their people directly. The public advocate will appoint a person directly, and the mayor will appoint his and the police commissioners. However, when the mayor does not adopt this is, I think, important for the public and transparency, when the mayor does not adopt the recommendations of the CCRB, who have investigated the complaint, he's going to have to tell the CCRB why those recommendations were not adopted. In addition, one of the issues that the public brought up and that others have raised is the issue that the jurisdiction of the CCRB does not allow them, or it is argued that they were not allowed to investigate related issues, particularly of officers who offer misleading statements during the investigation.
This is getting tricky.
We are proposing that officers who offer misleading statements about the events that are under the investigation could be disciplined for that by the CCRB. So you have more people being appointed by different people. You have the issue of misleading statements. You have the issue right now. It's hard for the CCRB because only the commission can issue a subpoena. That means that evidence is lost many times. So we're going to let them delegate to the chair or to the executive director.
This is the problem with the clock. As we get now down to the last 2 minutes of this show, I think we've covered two of the five areas.
Correct.
So I just need you to enumerate the other areas.
Okay. There's one area on budget, and that would give independent budgets to the five borough presidents, to the public advocate, and to the CCRB.
Okay.
It would allow the city to establish a rainy day fund. There's not enough time in the world to go into that.
Okay, we won't.
There are two budget issues with how the mayor puts the budget together on the revenue budget. I mean, these are kind of technical issues, but...
But again, there's a report.
Yes, there is.
There is an in-depth report that came out in July that you can get on the website.
Yes, www.charter2019.nyc, and you can see how we came to all of these things. Also, every piece of mail that we received with ideas, etc., is on our website, and you can look and see what people asked for and what they were interested in.
This has been a very interesting conversation about process. I think it's very important that listeners understand that this is out there, because people then go home and they say, you know, I'm not involved in the government. This is an opportunity to be part of how the city runs and the big choices that are made every day that affect people's lives. Gail Benjamin is the chair of the New York City Charter Revision Commission. Thank you very much. This flew by. I've got to do a couple of announcements. You can come back anytime before Election Day to reiterate these issues.
I would love to.
And I'm going to do a couple of messages before we go. I just want to reiterate what we said at the top of the show. Members should continue to visit Union Headquarters at 125 Barclay for services and activities until further notice. There's been some confusion because the building is beginning to undergo renovations, but you should go to the building if you need help on any issue. You can also call the numbers that you have been calling in the past. For upcoming updates, you can call 212-815-1000. You can always visit the website, www.dc37.net. And members should check out the DC37 Rewards program to achieve real savings while getting a great price for hotel rooms, ball games, any number of activities. To register, visit www.dc37rewards.com. That's it for the show. I'm Chris Policano. Till next time, ciao.